See, sometimes we don't know if we're coming or going here. Hey, True Seekers, welcome to Friday. I'm going straight to hell, just like my mama said. Oh, that's the tune that we close the program with every Friday. And, of course, after the show last night with the conversation with the very strange pastor from Wasilla, after Kathy left the studio, I sat here and played that and forgot to reset it. I think of Kevin Kinney every time I hear one of these crazy preachers. I'm going straight to hell. Oh, my goodness. G. Gordon Liddy, Newt Gingrich, all these ugly, repulsive white men who are all convicted of something or charged with. I mean, G. Gordon Liddy, convicted felon. Rush Limbaugh, charged with a felony. Newt Gingrich, thrown out of the House because of ethics violations. Holy Christ! Keep coming, boys. Keep identifying yourselves as the leaders of the Republican Party. I mean, even right-wing nutcases like John Cornyn and the senator from, who's the senator from Utah? Come on. You know who I mean. Hatch. Whew. Even Hatch and Cornyn are backing away from this madness. But I tell you what, boys, just keep talking. Keep putting word out there. The latest, of course, is about, about how, Sonia Sotomayor would make a decision if she were, in G. Gordon Liddy's words, menstruating. Yeah, he makes it four syllables. What a dumb bastard. G. Gordon Liddy, convicted felon, the guy who said he would kill his own mother on a street corner if he was ordered to do so by his exalted leader, Ronald Reagan. Can you believe this? Can you believe what has happened in this country from these right-wing bastards? Menstruating? Oh my God. I can't. Before we get completely into that, we need a breather here. And our friend Kay in San Francisco, who teaches school there, sent this to me. Mike, this week's programs have been understandably somber in tone. So I thought I'd share something hopeful to cap it off. The reason for my optimism lies in my students. When the California Supreme Court ruling on Prop 8 came down this week and word started spreading through the school hallways, the most frequent expressions I heard from students were, that sucks, WTF, only spoken out. That's so messed up. Granted, this isn't the most sophisticated language, but it does cut to the chase, don't you think? From what I saw and heard, the overwhelming majority of these kids reject the idea that marriage between two people of the same sex should be treated any differently than opposite marriage, so-called, to quote the brilliant Miss California. Oh, that's that Prejean woman. I teach, Kay writes, at a parochial all-girls school, and even in this more conservative setting, the younger generation is absolutely in tune with the fact that marriage is a civil contract and a civil right. They're also far more accepting of same-sex couples among their peers. When I attended this same school 26 years ago, that was definitely not the case. The progress I've witnessed in my little school genuinely gives me hope. I'm also attaching a page from our yearbook, which shows the student club I moderate, Amnesty International. I think you'll be impressed with the words of our president, Fatima, on the subject of human rights in general and in particular of the LGBT community. She's graduating tomorrow, will be off to college, where I know she'll make her mark, not only as a scholar, but also as a leader on issues of human rights. It's hard to find sometimes, but there is hope. Just wanted to share that after this difficult week. Kay in San Francisco. And the page she sent me is very interesting about the kids that she is mentoring and teaching. It just gets overwhelming sometimes. The cage has really been shaken on with the nomination. And I wonder sometimes if in the back of his mind, Barack Obama or Sonia Sotomayor, one or both, didn't realize that her nomination would do just this. Setting aside her court rulings, I think, as an appellate court judge, I think she's only had two rulings overturned by the U.S. Supreme Court. She is apparently a very effective judge, and but I'm sure that a woman of Puerto Rican heritage and a president with some African heritage, the two of them together must have had the thought, this is going to rattle the cages of the white male racists in this country to a degree that they have not been rattled for a very, very long time. And that certainly has turned out to be the case. Sotomayor's nomination is stirring latent racism also that is not just so embedded in white males, but is so deeply ingrained in the Republican Party. The Republican Party is the party of racism. There is no question. And any of you log cabin Republicans that listen to this program, how in God's name, so to speak, can you possibly, as a gay male or a lesbian woman, how can you possibly support the Republican Party? That is insane. You are displaying a political naivete that is breathtaking. Do you understand that? Don't you, gay Republicans? You do understand that. Okay. Latino Republicans and Latina Republicans, you understand it too, don't you? Or I say Hispanic. Hispanic Republicans, you understand what you are doing? And don't even get me started on black folk. Any African-American male or female in this country who comes anywhere within 20 blocks of the Republican Party is just asking to have his or her butt kicked even more by these white guys. It's astonishing. Who left in this country doesn't understand what the Republican Party is about? If you are of any race and gender combination other than white male, and you are and even that force is getting smaller and smaller and smaller, because even conservative white males are starting to realize, oh my God, what am I doing in here? And they're getting out. What is it down to now? 17% of Americans consider themselves to be Republicans? Wow. But I digress. Tom Tancredo's statement yesterday and Rick Sanchez, the CNN program, that La Raza is an Hispanic KKK just without the hoods or nooses? Oh, my God. Tom Tancredo's assertion that a civil rights organization, La Raza, is, quote, a Latino KKK without the hoods or the nooses. What are they doing? You know what La Raza is? Okay, literally, the word means the race. Yeah. Oh, goddamn, that makes them racist. The term originated in a book written in 1925, La Raza Cosmica, written by Mexican writer José Vasconcelos. He described La Raza Cosmica as the product of gradual racial mixing that was already underway in the Hispanic world. Vasconcelos believed that eventually all of the people within the former Spanish Empire would be completely mixed into a new race. The Hispanic people all around the United States, this is from Wikipedia, Hispanic people all around the U.S. have also started using this term to identify themselves. Nonetheless, the term and idea associated with it have been mainly adopted by some Mexican people in the United States to express pride in their origin. In general usage, La Raza implies dignity and pride for these people regarding who they are and their place of origin. An Hispanic KKK? Tom Tancredo, who whines about his Italian heritage, he whines about, well, I know about discrimination. You silly jackass. Ah. We'll be back after the break. I'm Mike Malloy. La tela de la araña, la uña del dragón.
que lleva a los infiernos. Ella es tu adicción. Te besa y te desnuda con su baile demencial. Cierras los ojitos y te dejas arrastrar. Tú te dejas arrastrar. Ella te cena, vive la vida loca y te volverá si de verdad te toca. Ella es tu final, vive la vida loca. Ella te dirá, vive la vida loca.
Now the hacienda is dark, the town is sleeping.
Doing talk radio right from the left, it's more Mike Malloy.
Vaya con Dios, my darling. Vaya con Dios, my love.
That was a real popular song at one point in this country. On top of everything else, there's a new high-tech software out there that is being used by departments of motor vehicles in various states around the country. And it is designed to compare a new license photo with your existing license photo. There's just one problem with this software. If the person being photographed smiles, the program will send an error message. Because what it is looking for is a non-neutral expression. In other words, a blank stare. It is official already in four states, Arkansas, Indiana, Nevada, and Virginia. And when you go into one of those states' Department of Motor Vehicles or satellite offices, you are told, don't smile. The only reason this caught my attention was, who would design a program? I mean, how much can you conceal? Oh, Jesus, now I'm going to get emails from people who say, well, Malloy, you know, that's why they tell you to just look into the camera when you get a mugshot, because they want to be able to compare. I really don't care that we're not talking about a mugshot. It's enough that we have to take our shoes off in order to get through security to board an airplane, right? It's enough we have to put our keys in a tray. I wear a black leather belt with a huge buckle. I'm hoping that someday I run across a right winger who says something nasty to me so I can take it off and just beat him into a blood-soaked pulp. But what? But I have to take the belt off and put it in the tray to go through security. Now this? Don't smile when you have your driver's license photo taken, because we will check your photo against what? An FBI database? A terror list? And if you're smiling, you might disguise yourself. And now the program is designed so that if you do smile, it'll reject your photo. Error, error, error. Oh, my God. Where do we live? Got an email from Mark, who, you got to check out his website, loghomes.com. He builds log homes. It's L-O-G-H-O-M-Z, loghomes.com, loghomes.com. A good site, just fun to go look at. Unless you want one built. I mean, you know. But Mark, who builds these, it's in Oregon, Sandy, Oregon. He says, here's a good reason for the, Mike, here's a good reason for those that have much, to leave a little for the less fortunate. In other words, you know, these biblical admonitions that Mark's getting to here in a second. about, you know, share, do unto others, yada, yada, and not just biblical. I'm talking about philosophical slash religious admonitions or instructions on how to live a decent life. And, you know, I've said a million times, I made it very clear, I'm totally an atheist. I'm a non-deist, yada, yada. I think religion is a hoax, a myth, and a sham. However, some of the writings of some of the religions obviously have gems of wisdom. My point is you can get the same thing from secular humanist writing. You can get it from Greek philosophy. You can get it from Chinese philosophy. You can get it anywhere. It doesn't have to be religion. But Mark says, here's a good reason for those that have much to leave a little for the less fortunate. I'll be listening to your program until the first Korean nuke takes out KPOJ. That's not funny. This is from Deuteronomy 24, verses 20 and 22. When you beat your olive trees, do not strip what is left. It shall be for the alien, the orphan, and the widow. When you gather the grapes of your vineyard, do not glean what is left. It shall be for the alien, the orphan, and the widow. Remember that you were a slave in the land of Egypt. Therefore, I am commanding you to do this. Well, that seems pretty simple. Beating the olive tree was a way, obviously, of my grandfather used to do that in Italy. That's a way of harvesting your olives. When you beat your olive tree, do not strip what is left. It shall be for the alien, the orphan, and the widow. Gosh, send this to Rush Limbaugh or General Glenn Beck or G. Gordon Liddy, who had completely dropped off my radar screen until today, or Newt Gingrich. Huh? I got a better idea. Send it to Benjamin Netanyahu. We'll be back after the break.
Or freezes, long as I got my plastic Jesus riding on the dashboard on my car. Through my trials and tribulations and my travels through the nations, with my plastic Jesus I'll go far. Riding down the thoroughfare.
Your nightly ammunition against right-wing rhetoric. Get locked and loaded with Mike Malloy.
Twenty-five before the hour, we have a report from our economics correspondent that I want to share with you here. This is Mr. Geithner goes to China, the Secretary of the Treasury. And as you know, he speaks Chinese. Prairie 2 writes, Obama's Secretary of Treasury is off to China this weekend. Most of the early meetings will revolve around formalities and ceremonies with photo ops posed with cups OT. But at some point, the Mandarin-speaking Geithner will be expected to convey the new official policy of the United States. This new policy reverses 16 years of official policy, in reality, 40 years of U.S. government policy. The new policy is to revive the American manufacturing base. Mr. Geithner is tasked with convincing China to reverse its dollar policy that enables Chinese goods to overwhelm the U.S. market. It is doubtful that China will agree to this, or that this would even fix the problem, given the dismal condition of our economy. But the real purpose of the visit will be to convince China that Barack Obama has a plan and what he expects China's role to be. Given the looming crisis in the U.S., China has little choice but to make some sort of agreement. The number of Americans on unemployment sets a new record every week. Most of the holders of commercial real estate are teetering on the edge of bankruptcy. The number of homeowners behind on their mortgages has gone past 12% and is climbing. 8 million foreclosures are expected this year. The next big downturn is expected this fall and could make 2008 seem like the good old days. So far, all President Obama has done is to attempt to reinflate the banking bubble. But with no real economy to support it, this won't last. Layoffs, business bankruptcies, and wild swings in prices could ignite deflation, which would drive a collapse that the government is not prepared to deal with. As workers' extended unemployment benefits begin to run out, the real pain that has to be postponed will begin to set in. People will start to demand that action be taken. Unfortunately, few Americans have any idea what that action should be. You see, most Americans alive today have been raised on a steady diet of anti-union, pro-corporation, and government is the problem nonsense. And you can count on the pig man to be there to tell them this nonsense. The question then is, will Obama be there with a plan the American people can get behind before the panic starts? Go to Prairie2's website and comment if you like. Prairie2.com. Yeah, I'm in that generation, right? As a matter of fact, there's probably three generations who have been lied to about corporations and the government action where it concerns the economy and where it concerns foreign policy. Oh, absolutely. I never knew. You know, I was in elementary school in 1953. I didn't know that our CIA was busy overthrowing governments. I had no idea. Matter of fact, I don't think we were even told about the CIA back then. But I lived in an area that was not anti-union. Trust me on that. It was very pro-union. So I didn't hear a lot of that either. As a matter of fact, when I went through elementary school, and even into high school, we learned about Walter Reuther. We learned about John L. Lewis. We learned about Samuel Gompers. We learned about these people. They were in our textbooks. It's not so anymore, is it? Stop the average high school senior on the street and ask, hell, stop the average college student. Who was Samuel Gompers? One of the finalists on YouTube, the American Idol, or something? Yeah. Who was Walter Reuther? And given the fact that the UAW has been turned into this clawless kitten that it's been turned into, I'm sure Walter Reuther is just rolling in his grave. So anyway, I grew up in a time when unions were explained to us very clearly. Of course, I lived in the industrial Midwest, back when there was an industrial Midwest, back when it was in the United States and not China. And as far as the government is concerned, we weren't told that government was necessarily bad. It began at some point in my youth when the Republicans would start clawing for power. And we were led to believe that government was bad. And why was government bad? Well, we could never, I don't know, we could never come up with a sensible, logical, valid reason why government was bad. I'm not talking about government attempting to do things that the average person can do without a permit. Like, you know, if your local government says you need a business license to open up a lemonade stand, well, of course, that's insanity. That, yes. But when government says you can't put products on the market that will make you sick or kill you or injure you, and the government is saying that, when the government says you can't pollute the ground, when the government says you can't blow off the tops of mountains to get to the coal, when the government says you can't dump toxic materials into streams and rivers and oceans, that's not the government intervening where it shouldn't be. That's the government doing exactly what it is supposed to do. Because what is the balance to unbridled corporate capitalism? What's the balance? Now, of course, that balance arguably doesn't exist anymore because so many government regulatory agencies have been co-opted completely. The Bush-Cheney years took care of that. Well, the Reagan years, actually. Started with Reagan. Even Nixon, even Dick Nixon, he's the one that started the Environmental Protection Agency, for Christ's sake. Even Nixon had enough sense. But these latter-day Republicans? Oh, God. Which is a good way to segue into G. Gordon Liddy. Yesterday on his radio talk show, this is according to Crooks and Liars, Liddy continued the right-wing's all-out assault on Sonia Sotomayor. First, just like former Representative Tom Tancredo, Liddy slammed Sotomayor's affiliation with the civil rights group La Raza and referred to the Spanish language as illegal alien language. An illegal alien language. There's no point in my, cutting loose with a string of profanities here and taking the program right up to the edge of FCC regulations again, but this kind of scum, why is G. Gordon Liddy, why is Rush Limbaugh, why do these people, why is General Glenn Beck, why do, Corporal Hannity, why do these people have programs? Seriously, why? Because they sell stuff? I tell you what, close down Limbaugh, General Beck, and Hannity, and watch the numbers on the programs on the so-called left, Tom Hartman and this program, and maybe who else is left? Jesus, I guess Stephanie would count. Bill Press. Liddy said on his program, quote, I understand that they found out today that Ms. Sotomayor is a member of La Raza, which means in illegal alien, the race. That's how he refers to Spanish. He went on to say, and that should not surprise anyone because she's already on record with a number of racist comments. This piece of human excrement is talking about someone else making a racist comment when there was no racist comment involved whatsoever. But this is G. Gordon Liddy, convicted felon. This is a guy who operated in the shadows where it concerned the mass killing that went on in Central America during the Reagan years. G. Gordon Liddy, this is the guy who helped destabilize everything working for Dick Nixon. And he refers to somebody as a racist. Then Liddy, after he finished with his race-based attack, he moved on to denigrate Sotomayor's gender. He said, quote, let's hope that the key conferences aren't when she's menstruating. That's how he pronounces it. Menstruating or something. Or just before she's going to menstruate. That would really be bad. Lord knows what we would get then. Do you get that? Let's hope that the key conferences regarding Supreme Court decisions aren't when she's menstruating or something, or just before she's going to menstruate. There's more, but that is so vile. It is so contemptible. I don't know why it upsets me, because it displays the absolute spider-like ignorance of this dumb son of a bitch. On the other hand, I question why. What is his syndicator? Who are his advertisers? What is the point of having this guy on the air? Oh, there's a reason we're playing this. Phil Spector, who produced so much of that wall of sound music from the 60s, was sentenced to 19 years to life today for murder in L.A. He, according to the L.A. Times, he stared straight ahead. It was the appointed hour for the legendary music producer's six-year murder case to come to a close, and the courtroom was packed. He was told he will not be eligible for parole until 2028, at which time he'll be 88 years old. And last week he had some precancerous polyps removed from his throat. Phil Spector, who shot a woman to death, 19 years to life. It is. I'm sorry. It's just madness. That's all. It's about 8 minutes before the hour. Email from Mike in Golden, Colorado writes, Mike, I'm a software engineer, and this is about the facial recognition software that is being used by departments of motor vehicles. He writes, Mike, I'm a software engineer, and I know how difficult it is for computers to recognize faces. You have to understand that a computer is a screamingly fast idiot. The average computer can do more stupid things in a second than W did during his entire presidency. Okay, maybe an hour or a year. Okay, maybe 10 years. The point is that when we do it, what we do at a glance, computers have to do pixel by pixel, allowing for age, haircuts, all the things we abstract out easily. So the admonition, don't smile when you're getting your picture taken for your license, makes perfect sense. Now, whether we want computers to be able to recognize us in spite of smiling, .. Mike and Golden. Yeah, I guess I kind of got that. I'm glad you wrote, though, Mike, that why it has to be done that way. I guess the part of the story that really bothered me was the error message, if somebody smiles. There's something very something very Kurt Vonnegut-ish about a computer giving an error message that just took your picture. Oh, my God. Or would it be Joseph Heller? Anyway, thanks, Mike. Now, you know, we talk a lot here since we're based here in the foothills of the North Georgia Mountains. We talk a lot about the crazy people that get elected to Congress, both the House and the Senate here, and our governors and our state legislators. I mean, this is a real septic tank where it concerns people we send to represent us. But it's not just those people. You may have seen the story, a writer for a small Georgia newspaper who wanted to give Barack Obama a letter. when he arrived at LAX, I guess, the other day, The plane landed in Los Angeles, and she was had to be forcibly removed from a press area near Air Force One. Shortly before Air Force One arrived, airport security officers carried the woman away by the feet and arms as she protested her removal. She was then allowed to leave. There's a picture on the website at MikeMalloy.com. Oh, it's with your daily. Okay, you can go there to see the picture. She said the letter she had written was opposing gay marriage. Jesus, God. She later identified herself as Brenda Lee. Uh-huh. A writer for the Georgia Informer in Macon. And so far, everything's cool, right? A woman who works for a monthly publication who showed up at LAX to hand the President of the United States an envelope, like he's going to take it, like Secret Service would say, oh, Mr. President, come over here. A woman wants to give you an envelope. Yeah. Okay, it's bad enough up to this point, but here comes the kicker. She identified herself as Brenda Lee, writer for Georgia Informer and Macon, and said she is a Roman Catholic priestess. There you go. Who lives in Anaheim. And she insisted, although she couldn't produce them, that she had White House press credentials. She is a Roman Catholic priestess. I'm sure Archbishop of L.A. will be interested to meet this woman. Later in a telephone interview with the Associated Press, she said that she wanted to hand Obama a letter urging him to, quote, take a stand for traditional marriage, end quote. Secret Service, she said she asked a Secret Service agent to give the president her letter, but he refused. He said, no, lady, no, please go away, please. Then she tried to give the letter to a White House staffer, and he said essentially the same thing, please just go away. And then she was asked to leave, and when she didn't leave, she was surrounded by airport security, and she asked them, why are you bothering me? Why are you bothering me? She said they escorted me outside the gate, and then security officers allowed her to return when she promised, cross her heart, that she would not yell or wave. But then other officers arrived and told her to leave. They weren't going to trust her, I guess. And the photograph that it's Kathy's diary at MikeMalloy.com shows her being carried off by the two officers who picked her up and carried her out. She said the reason she was screaming, she said, quote, I was afraid you could see under my clothes. End quote. We'll be back after the break. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy.
Did you catch the...
Welcome back. 7 past the hour. A couple emails here, and then we'll get back into the shank of the program. First, regarding Phil Spector's conviction today, David, who's listening on KTLK in Los Angeles, writes, Mike, don't you just love American justice? Lieutenant William Calley oversaw the murder of more than 500 men, women, and children at My Lai, and for that atrocity served 4 years under house arrest. Phil Spector will serve nearly 20 years for killing one person. Of course, he wasn't wearing a uniform. Sincerely, David. Actually, the 4 years that Calley was sentenced to never materialized. He actually, I think Nixon commuted his sentence. He served about 6 months of house arrest. And I don't even think it was really that. He wound up being a jeweler, just FYI, being a jeweler. He worked in a jewelry store in Columbus, Georgia, which is right, you know, Columbus, Georgia is where Fort Benning is, which I believe is the base from which Calley went to Vietnam. He was a jeweler. I saw a picture of him. The last picture I saw of Calley, I think Calley's dead now. Or no, maybe he's not. But the last picture I saw of Lieutenant Calley was about 25 years ago in the Journal Constitution here in Atlanta. There was a picture of him with one of the jeweler's glasses in his eye, looking at somebody's ring, all puffed up and weird looking. from Michael in Roswell, New Mexico, writing, The subject line, perhaps this explains why the gas bags are on the air. He writes, Henry Ford, who was famously remembered for instituting the $5 day in 1914. Yeah, Ford, he decided to pay his workers $5 a day. And as Michael writes, that was required because, contrary to Ford's explanation of wanting to make his workers his consumers, his factories had become so fast-paced and exhausting to work in that his worker turnover rate was 380% in 1913. And in 1911, Ford had modeled his assembly lines on the most brutal business at the time, the slaughterhouse. So in case you ever wondered where the assembly line came from, at least where it concerns the motor car industry, the slaughterhouse. Anyway, Michael writes, Ford, famously remembered for instituting the $5 day in 1914, was blaming the Great Depression on the poor. By March of 1931, he said, quote, "These are really good times, but only if you know it. The average man won't really do a day's work unless he's caught and cannot get out of it," end quote. And then Ford at the time had a personal worth in 2008 dollars of about $3 billion. He had been laying off thousands and refused to make any contributions to a workers' unemployment fund. And this precipitated the Ford Hunger March of March 1932, during which Ford's private police shot and killed five marchers and wounded a couple dozen more. Did Henry Ford ever serve any time for that? Of course not. And Michael goes on, the right wing can't be having anyone on the court that doesn't fully represent the interests of anyone but the political and economic elite of this country. And the people on the air, these pissants, make their money seeing to it that public opinion is swayed to the interests of the wealthy and powerful. It was John Jay, the first Chief Justice of the Supreme Court, who is reputed to have said, quote, "The people who own the country ought to govern it," end quote. Ooh, really? I didn't know that. And then D writes, where's D from? D doesn't say. But regarding G. Gordon Liddy's comment about Sotomayor, D writes, Liddy is a dumbass. Sotomayor is in her mid-50s and probably well past the point of menstruating, as he puts it. Oh, and you know why these guys are on the air? You've said it often enough. They're running a protection racket. Their job is to muddy the waters, to confuse enough of us so we don't join forces and go after the establishment, which owns every damn thing in this country. And then she writes, P.S. And come on, Mike, how come you didn't tell the people that that woman was that Roman Catholic priestess was some crazy black woman? And I'm a black woman. She's advocating for traditional marriage, huh? She ain't got a chance in left damn hell of marrying anybody, traditional or otherwise. I'm so sick, D writes, of some folks opposing gay marriage out of jealousy. You read that right. They ain't got a chance at marriage, so they begrudge the gay folk that opportunity. Just one black woman keeping the blank real, Mike. D. Thanks, D. D calls once in a while, doesn't she? Yeah. D's great. Yeah, I was going to say something about Sotomayor being past the age of menstruating, but, you know, far be it from me to talk that kind of bodily function on the air. I mean, you know. Why, Mike? Do you think it's nasty and dirty? No, I don't at all. A lot of religious people think it is, though. Unclean! Unclean! There's a lot of problem out in California. You people are listening in California. What in the hell are you going to do? I read today that Schwarzenegger's budget cuts could mean the closing of up to 220 of your state parks. And among those closures, the home of the world's tallest tree and other attractions that draw millions of visitors. Is it that? I know why it's that bad, and I'll tell you, I'll get to that in a second. But according to the Associated Press, Schwarzenegger this week recommended eliminating $70 million in park spending through June, and an additional $143 million the following fiscal year, which I guess starts, what, July 1st, by keeping the parks closed. Among the parks that will be closed, according to the Parks Department, Lake Tahoe's Emerald Bay, Will Rogers' Southern California Ranch, Humboldt Redwood State Park, which boasts the world's tallest tree, a giant redwood, I believe. Redwood that tops 370 feet. Is that the one that's 5,000 years old? I don't even know. Even the governor's mansion in Sacramento is on the list. See, last year, the legislature rejected the governor's proposal to close 48 state parks, but lawmakers said that with California's budget deficit now at $24 billion, the situation is so dire that it's likely your parks are going to close. And, oh, by the way, at least 2,000 park rangers, biologists, lifeguards, interpreters, architects, and maintenance workers will be laid off if this happens. The California park system attracts nearly 80 million visitors a year, and they're going to be closed. They're going to be closed. You know why, don't you? If you live in California, damn good and well, why? Prop 13 that passed way back in 1978. Remember Prop 13? It was titled The People's Initiative to Limit Property Taxation. This is another one of those referenda that was put on the ballot back then. And it was a ballot initiative to amend the California Constitution. And it passed. And the most significant portion of the act was the first paragraph that capped real estate taxes. But there was more. There was more. In addition to lowering property taxes, the initiative also contained language requiring 2/3 majority in both legislative houses for future increases in all state tax rates or amounts of revenue collected, including income tax. It also required 2/3 vote majority in local elections for local governments wishing to raise special taxes. So the so-called taxpayer revolt, what was the guy's name that led that? I forget his name. But what the hell was his name? I think he was a real estate agent, wasn't he? Or insurance man or something. But this is the reason California is going bankrupt. They're hamstrung. 2/3 vote in the California legislature, both houses, in order to get a tax increase. 2/3 vote. Now, according to what I read deeper into this, this affects mostly the people with property on the coast. They're protected from tax increases, property tax increases beyond what I think it's what is it, 1%? I don't know. It's too. Well, here it is. The maximum amount of any ad valorem tax on real property shall not exceed 1% of the full cash value of the property. Blah blah blah. Okay, but the bit about requiring a 2/3 majority in both houses to raise taxes. This is why California is faced with what is faced. Closing 220 state parks. Oh, and summer starts in, what, less than a month?
Don't be afraid. Be very afraid. It's Michael Loy.
It is 21 past the hour. John in Los Angeles. It was Howard Jarvis. Thanks, everybody, for reminding the guy that shepherded Prop 13 onto the ballot. Debbie writes that today on Lou Dobbs, they were blaming it's the illegals' fault in California, not the fact that they can't raise taxes. Oh, raise taxes. Oh. Michael writes, if Sotomayor is past the time of menstruation, the right wing would bitch about her hot flashes. Yeah, that's true. Anyway, from John in Los Angeles, regarding the bankrupt position that the state of California is finding itself in, John writes, we can't afford it anymore. The legislature has wasted billions of dollars every year on unneeded things. Now the chickens are coming home to roost. If it is not absolutely necessary, we need to curtail or stop spending on it. We just don't have the money for it. We have to live within our means, and we have to cut back when income drops. So should the state have to. Example, the state is spending hundreds of thousands of dollars putting ads on the radio for boating safety. They run several times an hour, all day. John in L.A. I understand, but if income taxes were essentially, and the ability to tax was essentially frozen in 1978, which is 30-some years ago, and when you factor in a very low inflation rate over that period of time, then obviously the state, I mean, how else does a government entity finance anything? Through taxes. It doesn't come in the form of donations. It comes from taxes. So if the people of California decided in 1978 to screw the future, they did a good job. I understand your point, John, about not having the money to take care of the things that are needed. But what the hell are you all cutting out there? You're cutting preschool education. I can't go down the list, but everything's being cut. As far as the state parks are concerned, I mean, this makes no sense whatsoever. If the people, how many people are in California? 40 million? I don't even know anymore. I guess that's about right. If the people of California refuse to tax themselves in order to keep running their essential services, you know, to hell with boat ads. And why aren't those being run as PSAs anyway? Why should the state have to pay for it? Those are, we play PSAs on this program. We don't get paid for it. But if the people in the state of California over the past 32 years or 31 years have not been able to realize that the Howard Jarvis Prop 13 guaranteed that at some point the state of California was going to collapse into bankruptcy, shouldn't the people in the state of California come out of the ether now and say, oh, goddamn, we made a horrible mistake? Okay, maybe not then. All right. Let the public hospitals close. Let the education system collapse. No more public transportation. Park rangers, cops, firemen, emergency personnel, shut it down. Yes, sir. That'll show those spending crazy people, right? Now, come on, John. I get your point, but profligate spending in California? Like on what? I don't think it's been profligate spending. I don't think any state has done that. Have they? I mean, what do I know? But 32 years ago, some freak convinced the people in California, if he wanted to limit property taxes with Prop 13, okay. But the next paragraph put in that little kicker that in order to raise taxes of damn near any kind, I guess maybe except a sales tax, it would take a 2/3 vote of both houses of the California legislature. That is a prescription for, well, bankruptcy. Now, if you want to overthrow the state government, if you want to end government and move to anarchy, this is the way to do it. This is precisely the way to do it. You know, the people that say the power to tax is the power to destroy are out of their goddamn minds. The power to tax is the power to run things, to govern. Unless you're a crazy person. I mean, if the people of California would flip the other way and be total sheep, and if the governor or the legislature would say, okay, we're going to tax everything up to 80%. Okay. But the reverse of that is just as nuts. So, but I get your point. Prop 13. You know, those ballot initiatives to me are insane anyway. If you're going to do that, okay, then disband your legislature. Just get rid of them. And what do you need a governor for? Just have some CEO of some corporation. I know, California Power and Light. Have them run everything and get rid of the legislature. Isn't it their job to debate and pass laws? And you've turned it over to people in the street who can pass things like denying gay folk civil rights? Jesus, God.
And the love that I feel is so far away. I'm a bad dream that I just can't take. And you shake your head and said it's a shame.
Had another cup of coffee. Here's Mike Malloy.
Brrr. Greg Sargent's blog at the Plumb Line brought up a point today about Sandra Day O'Connor, a Ronald Reagan appointee, who said gender and race do impact judging. Of course, nobody said anything then because it was Saint Reagan. But as Greg writes, Sonia Sotomayor is taking a beating from conservatives for her speech in 2001, saying that gender and race will inevitably impact one's judgment and jurisprudence. But guess who said something very similar? Sandra Day O'Connor, who was appointed to the Supreme Court by Reagan in 1981. O'Connor said she brought to the court the, quote, perspective of a woman, end quote. That was in an interview with the Ladies' Home Journal soon after she was appointed. While O'Connor also said there were other factors that influence her judging more than her gender, she clearly said it was a factor. Here's how the Associated Press reported her comments in March of 1982. Quote, the first woman on the high court tends to play down that role somewhat. Sandra Day O'Connor said, quote, I think that I bring to the court differences in background that are more germane than my gender. My experience as a legislator gives me a different perspective. Also, I bring to the court the perspective of a woman, primarily in a sense that I am female, just as I am white, a college graduate, etc. Yes, I will bring the understanding of a woman to the court, but I doubt that that alone will affect my decisions, end quote. She went on to say, quote, I think the important fact about my appointment is not that I will decide cases as a woman, but that I am a woman who will get to decide cases, end quote. And according to Greg Sargent, on another occasion, O'Connor similarly suggested that race impacts one's judging, too. After the retirement of Thurgood Marshall, O'Connor said approvingly that Marshall, quote, imparted not only his legal acumen, but also his life experiences to the bench. And that is certainly a partial reference to Marshall's race. And of course, Sammy the Fish Alito said the same thing. I said it was Tancredo. My bad. It was Sammy the Fish Alito when he was being confirmed. He talked about how he thinks his family's history of suffering discrimination when he judges discrimination cases. Really? He said that? And as one of the writers at Greg Sargent's blog said, seriously, do conservatives think we should all pretend that an all-black Supreme Court would have decided Dred Scott the same way the all-white Supreme Court did? It's ridiculous that when a white guy makes this comment about how his Italian heritage would help him in discrimination cases, it's a duh moment. But when Sotomayor says her Latin heritage would and gender will help her in discrimination cases, it's the most racist thing anybody ever said anywhere. Yeah, well, we take this all a bit too seriously, wouldn't you think? But maybe not. This is very interesting. I want to share something with you that came to me from who sent this? Harriet and Charlotte, authors of Clueless at the Top. Harriet and Charlotte Childress. Sonia Sotomayor is right about white males, but it's not their fault. If African-American females were on top of our country's hierarchies, then Sonia Sotomayor would have probably said, quote, I would hope that a wise Latina woman with the richness of her experience would more often than not reach a better conclusion than an African-American woman who hasn't lived that life, end quote. You see, the hierarchies of the last 230 years of the United States have brought white males many visible opportunities not afforded others, such as wealth, professional opportunity, power, freedom of mobility. However, being perched on top while doing what it takes to believe that they deserve their opportunities keeps white males in a clueless state. This lack of awareness has nothing at all to do with the fact that they are white and male, only that they are on top of our hierarchies. White males have difficulty seeing hierarchies, particularly white males with many other so-called higher characteristics, such as being tall or heterosexual or wealthy or Christian or able-bodied or educated in elite private schools. So-called higher people make rules that reflect their own desires, perspectives, and needs, so they have little incentive to question the system they create. The comment, "wise Latina woman," is perfectly logical because hierarchies are easiest to see when viewed from the so-called lower levels. Lower people understand hierarchies because they have to adjust to decisions and policies that are not designed with their desires or their perspectives or their needs in mind. As typical of anyone on top, white males, who might feel themselves superior anyway because of their position afforded by the hierarchy, white males can be clueless to the advantages of people lower on hierarchies. Lower, so-called, people know how to get things done without the support, the encouragement, the hand-holding, the resources, or the recognition that higher people, white males, have historically had at their fingertips. Lower people have developed problem-solving methods that are valuable and effective while simultaneously dealing with the pain, the frustration, and scarcity created by decisions at the top. So-called lower people are in the position to know whether or not decisions and policies of the United States create equality and opportunities for life, liberty, and happiness for all, and not just for those at the top. Struggles and creativity born out of necessity build strong communities, as lower people have to rely on each other when they do not have the resources that hierarchies send upward. We live in very exciting times. Our hierarchies are crumbling and being replaced with the new creativity and hope that comes from no longer being shackled by old, outdated ways. Come on, you traditional white males, join in the change. There's a whole vibrant, fun world outside our hierarchies, much more exciting than your balancing act of staying on top. Let's talk about it. Yeah, that makes absolutely, totally perfect sense. You can get more of this at cluelessatthetop.com. Cluelessatthetop.com. That's the website Harriet and Charlotte Childress, apparently, have written this book, Clueless, or it's a website? What is it? I didn't go there. I just was fascinated by the email. But check them out, cluelessatthetop.com. Thanks, both of you, for sending this in, Charlotte and Harriet. Doesn't that make sense, Kathy? It's not an entirely new idea, this, what these two women have laid out here, but the way they articulate it is perfect. When you are, what's the old expression? When you think you're a hammer, everything in the world looks like a nail. But white male privilege, this is something that white males just don't talk about, because a lot of white males enjoy privilege that they don't realize is privilege. They may be uneducated, these white males. They may live in a double wide. They may not have a lot of education. But the laws are structured to the degree that when this white male, he can very quickly disguise himself if he wants to, get a haircut, shave, put on a coat and tie, and he can damn near go anywhere he wants to go, can he? But someone else who is a different gender, different race, would they have that kind of right, privilege on the hierarchy? No, of course not. But we white males don't stop to think about this. We just don't. And as these two women point out, why should we? How would we know? Where is the benefit of perspective? We don't have it. That's the reason the authors here talk about the cluelessness of white males. And not that white males are necessarily stupid, it's just that they've been on the top, or we've been on the top so long, it no longer registers as being the top. Or we just assume that what we have, what white males have in terms of power or position or a place on the hierarchy, is ours by right of race and gender. Okay. Anyway, thanks, ladies, Harriet and Charlotte Childress, for writing this. Check out their website, cluelessatthetop.com. We got a break here coming pretty quick. All right, we're going to open up the phone lines during this next break. So if you want to call in. Oh, this is from Jim Ross, who owns a coffee shop in Beaverton, Oregon, if you live in that area. He said, Mike, I own a coffee shop in Beaverton, Oregon. We have played both movies, Zeitgeist and Zeitgeist Addendum. We have played the original last year along with several thousand other private or public locations all over the world. We replayed it and also played Zeitgeist Addendum a few months ago. I would love to show them again to anyone who doesn't have easy internet access or would like to see it on a large screen. Please ask people to go to javanationcoffee.com, javanationcoffee.com. It's a coffee shop. And email me. We are in the Zeitgeist site, too, under Z-Day Events. Everyone needs to see these movies. Thanks, Jim Ross. There's another website for you, javanationcoffee.com. If you live in the Beaverton, Oregon area, and John will arrange, or Jim will arrange a showing if you want to see this on the large screen. That's your homework assignment for this weekend, remember? We'll be right back.
It frowns, dude, my life's a funny thing. Am I still too young? He kissed the woman there. She took his ring, took his babies. It took him minutes, took her nowhere. Heaven knows she'd have taken anything. Oh!
Hey, truth seekers, here's the truth speaker, Mike Malloy.
10 before the hour, Irish Dave writes, Mike, I don't mind so much the disproportionate share of social capital, so-called, that white males enjoy. It's their lack of knowledge and appreciation of it that really hacks me off. Yeah. You'd think. And Dee Dee, not Dee, but Dee Dee writes, Mike, I was listening to your show in the car a little while ago when you were talking about Governor Schwarzenegger closing 200-plus state parks. Did you know he's planning on eliminating the Healthy Families Program, which provides health care for kids whose families don't have health insurance but make too much to qualify for Medi-Cal? Or that he has proposed eliminating dental screening for kids? That he's eliminating the CalWORKS program, California's welfare-to-work program for families with children? He's also proposed stripping all of the state general funds from the maternal, child, and adolescent health program. He's pulling funds from child welfare services, from foster care, from in-home support services, from schools. The list goes on and on. California is falling into the sea. But it doesn't have anything to do with the San Andreas fault. This is a disaster of monstrous proportions if the legislature allows it all to pass. Dee Dee. I don't understand why the people of California don't demand that this madness stop. And what that means, they'll have to tax themselves. I understand about the housing crisis and the economic crisis and the job crisis and so on and so on and so on and so on. You know, the way to eliminate this altogether, excuse me, is in the case of California, first, to pass some emergency legislation that jacks up taxes to the point where these services will not be canceled. But you know what? That's a stopgap measure. You know what the ultimate answer to all this? Of course you do. It just nobody talks about it. Nobody talks about it. It's social democracy or democratic socialism. That's what it is. To have... Oh, never mind. I'm beyond... thinking that anybody gives a tinker's damn about my particular opinion on democratic socialism. So, you know, screw it. But as far as I'm concerned, that is a solution. It really is. This is insane. I mean, we truly are going through some sort of metamorphosis here that if we don't go through with it, we're just going to die. Do you understand that? We really are. We really are just going to die. The country, the population, maybe the whole damn globe. But let's just, you know, keep it local, right? Here in the States, we are in a transition period. It's devouring us. It's taking everything. And I think part of the reason it's taking so much is because we're resisting it, right? That concept of resistance. Resistance is futile. On something like this. This is an elemental social change that is surrounding us. And if we don't pay attention to it, are we doomed? Is that too strong a statement? I mean, this is like sheep farmers in the 1830s refusing to acknowledge that the Industrial Revolution was happening. Okay, don't pay any attention to it. But, you know, it's still going to happen. And everything changed. Not necessarily for sheep farmers. I'm just saying, you know. We do not live in the country envisioned by the founders. And I'm not talking about the slavery and the genocide that they so easily incorporated into the founding of this country. I'm talking about the Jeffersonian attitudes about small businesses, independent farms, free trade among the various states, a legal system that could not be tampered with by the corporations. And remember, was it Franklin or Jefferson or a couple of them, maybe both? And Lincoln, and a whole clutch of people who warned that the death of this country would come at the hands of the corporations. I mean, this is not new stuff. But you see, nobody reads this anymore. Nobody cares. Nobody knows. Nobody reads the Federalist Papers. Nobody reads anything. We don't. And the only reason I do is because I'm in this business. If I weren't in this business, I wouldn't read squat. I wouldn't. I would just be a blissfully unaware, stupid American. I'm sorry, but and I'm not saying you have to be in the radio business in order to read, to understand things. I'm not saying that. I'm just saying me. I know what my limits are. I'm forced to try to find things out so I don't sound like a total ass when I come on the air, just a partial ass, not a total ass. But the whole idea of corporate America now running America is it's here. You don't want to acknowledge that, do you? And Obama is trying to socialize certain industries, but he keeps hands off on the one industry that is sucking the lifeblood out of the entire system, and that's the financial services industry, the banking industry. Oh well, people in Washington are a hell of a lot smarter than I, or they would be doing a talk radio show, and I'd be in Washington. All right, your phone calls when we come back. Obviously, I just ran that break into the ground or that segment into the ground. So if you're on hold, please stick around and we will see what you got to talk about. What else do we have? Oh, just a whole stack of stuff here. But, you know, cookie boarding. Have you heard about that? The practice of torturing suspected terrorists. Received, this is from Raw Story, fresh blows Friday after a magazine reported that a key Al-Qaeda suspect offered useful intelligence after receiving sugar-free cookies. God damn. Oh, I hope I'll be back after this break. If I don't, you know, go over to the corner of the studio and open a vein. Anyway, stick around, okay? I'm Mike Malloy. Welcome back. It's 10 before the hour. All right, two emails. Here we're going to do two emails and then to your phone calls. This is from Larry. Regarding the California economic crisis, he writes, Mike, three states suffering the most from mortgage failure and economic chaos are California, Texas, and Florida. To which political party did the governors of these states belong? And what did they do since attaining office to avoid this fiasco? Who are their henchmen, I mean assistants, and who is perpetuating the disaster? Sorry, I have no answers, Larry. Well, you do the first part. Which party did the governors belong? And that's the Republican Party. Republican Party, even on a state level, policies are suicidal. We have the same situation here in Georgia. We have a Republican governor who is also in the position of slashing everything he can get his pudgy little hands on. He has reached the end of his term. I think next year he's had his 8 years. And the state is certainly in worse shape now than it was when he took over. But he'll probably get reelected because this is Redneckville. This is Georgia, where we have female Catholic priestesses and stuff. Heather writes, Mike, I'm listening and fully appreciating your attention to the disaster commonly known as Schwarzenegger and his so-called budget plan. Part of what I'm pretty sure is slipping under the radar with these budget cut proposals is the fact that many of these cuts would also mean forfeiting anywhere from 2 to 4 times as much as the savings that California receives in federal funds for these same programs. As if that isn't horrific enough, consider the phenomenon known as red state socialism. Basically, what this refers to is the return on the dollar that goes into the federal government back into the state originated from, that goes, from the federal government back into the state originated or something. The name comes from the fact that the vast majority of states that get a big return on what they give to the Fed are red states. For example, California, the return is only 78 cents on the dollar. Unless you understand what she's talking about. A dollar in taxes, federal taxes nets 78 back to the state. Whereas in Mississippi, for every dollar that they put in, they get $2.02 back. Yeah, that's red state socialism. It pisses me off too, Heather, when the cretins, these little scum sucking, and they're usually white Republicans males who talk about socialism. And their state is sucking up federal dollars at the expense of other states never mind. Anyway, she says, point being that I find forfeiting federal funds especially egregious for this very reason. Yeah. Heather. P.S. Another thing that drives me absolutely nuts about taxes here in California, in the richest county in the state, Orange County, they pay an entire percentage point less in sales tax than I do here in L.A. I've been saying for a while now that since they more than likely spend more than we do in Orange County, just equalizing the sales tax would go a long way in covering the budget deficit. But, oh, yeah, we'd have that effed up two-thirds rule to deal with, and God knows the Republicans in the legislature would never, ever let that happen. What was it you keep saying about needing to kill off that party? Yeah, Heather. Yeah, I hear you. I hear you, Heather. Yes. It grieves me. I've always had an attraction to two places in this country. And I know there are others that are equally or greater in attraction. But California and New York City. Just the romance of both places. California and New York City. I always consider both of those places to be kind of like fantasy places, places that I'm so familiar with from literature, because I've never lived in either state. I've spent a lot of time in New York, made several trips to California, drove around California for a month back in 1980 just for the sheer hell of it. But both places, New York and California, New York City and the state of California, it just seemed to me like kind of not Nirvana, not Shangri-La, but just places where I'd like to be. So to read about, I remember back in the 70s when it was the Ford administration that told New York City was on the verge of bankruptcy to go to hell, die, whatever. and the state of California now, because I don't know what Schwarzenegger's efforts are out there, if they're effective. He doesn't seem like an ogre like the Republican governor here, the Republican governor in other states. So, but I don't know. But to see California on the verge like this of just absolute chaos, absolute financial chaos that's going to result in the shutting down of so much that is so desperately needed, especially now, you see. All these social welfare programs that are going to be gutted, if not shut down completely, at a time when they are desperately needed. This is the part that, so anyway, Heather and anybody else who's listening in California, I don't know. I hope you all can figure out a way to pull out of it. But I can say the same thing about Georgia, about the entire country. You know, it's that transitory or transitional period that we're in. And we are on so many levels. We really, really are. Talk to people who are more attuned to spiritual aspects than I am, and they'll tell you the same thing. There is this enormous turning that's occurring right now. And to resist this, I don't care if it's your spiritual development or your job or the system of government we have, it's really breaking down. Do you notice that? It's everything is just kind of slipping and sliding. What's going to happen in California if you all get the big one out there? You know, what the hell? What's going to happen in Louisiana if they get slammed again? What's going to happen in Texas, Florida, you know, with hurricane season is coming. But this idea that there is for lack of a better word, because I'm not that tuned into this, but this idea of a turning, spiritual, physical, psychological turning, it's churning would be the word I would look for. But I've been told it's a turning. It's an ending of this and a dawning of that, and it's in that period right now where. The ending is not quite there, and the beginning is not quite there, and we've got this chaos. I don't know. Is that true? Sure as hell seems like it to me. And no, you won't find that in the book of Revelation. To your phone calls, Jonathan is calling from Burlington, Vermont. Jonathan, welcome to the program.
Hi, Mike.
Hey,
how are you?
I'm fine.
I guess, I really can't top that fantastic email. I just think it's so funny listening to the list of cuts. It's really the same here. It's been the same
in Vermont.
Yeah,
really?
It's not on the quite the degree of crisis.
Right.
Being such a small state, but there have been. We've had a Republican governor now for quite some time since Howard Dean, and. Every time throughout the depletion of, in other words, the transfer of things the federal government did to state responsibility and the consequent, depletion mm-hmm. of state coffers, every cut has been, and I wanted to say this in terms of California, it's just so funny to me, and I wonder what would another society, what would Denmark think of the people and our priorities in this country?
Really?
If they heard that rather than, could you imagine if Schwarzenegger said, well, we're going to have to, and I hate to name individual communities, but we're going to have to postpone, I don't know, the harbor dredging project in mm-hmm. Sausalito or Marin County,
mm-hmm.
or the people in Palm Springs are going to have to boil their water for 2 years because we can't do that, that pipe cleaning system, but we're still going to take care of kids' teeth.
Mm-hmm.
And we're still going to give old people their medicine,
mm-hmm.
and we're still going to give school lunches. It's never that. The first cuts are always kids' teeth.
Yeah, it's always against the constituencies that the power thinks cannot respond, like children, like poor people, like poor old people, like poor not old people. I hear you loud and clear, Jonathan. I got a break here, pal. Thanks a lot for checking in.
Thanks for the pieces in my face. Broken hands, I'm broken flowers.
he's not ready to make nice. It's Mike Malloy.
It is 21 past the hour. Let me slip this email in and back to your calls. This is from Jude in Seattle, who writes, Mike, I'm struggling. Oh, this is regarding Gordon Liddy and what Jude calls his rape through words. She writes, Mike, I'm struggling with anger. I mean, feeling pissed off and having to really monitor the emotional status of where I am at any given moment, which for one who is part of Women Standing, it's a peace organization, appears to be the exact opposite of what I stand for. Peace versus anger. Gordon Liddy, Newt Gingrich, Tancredo, and the rest of them, what vile examples they represent. As Frank Schaeffer shared in his book, Crazy for God, they made me want to throw up. Yet what Gordon Liddy actually said brought back a time when a male attacking a woman, be it physically, emotionally, and yes, even spiritually, they would have had their face slapped. These poisonous empty shells that are walking this earth in the form of some slightly discernible male has shifted me into another awareness. Not that this is more distressing with the torture issues, the killing, the lies, the violations, but it is a bottomless pit, and this is exactly where they belong, in the bottomless pit. As a woman, Gordon Liddy's statement regarding a woman who does not know, as if that makes any difference to him, think he can make any reference to her menses, to me, that was a form of rape, Mike. Jude. Yeah, I mean, it even shocked me, and I'm kind of beyond shock on most things except pictures of children from Gaza or Afghanistan or Iraq. Those still make me want to claw my own eyeballs out so that I will never have to see them. And then I realize how selfish that is because. But beyond that, I'm, you know, pretty hardened at this point. I really am. I mean, how can you not be? But when someone as undesirable as G. Gordon Liddy makes a statement about Sotomayor the way he did, is, you know, that just makes my head snap. I just think, Jesus Christ, I mean, are we still are listening to that? We still, that is on the air? That is over the air broadcasting? That is, and the quick answer is yes, of course, absolutely. Because in mentioning Gordon Liddy's name, you see, it brings in listeners. In mentioning Rush Limbaugh, the way he has now become a fixture on the evening news on two networks. Yes, a fixture on the evening news. Rush Limbaugh, when they want a quote, and I'm not saying this is a bad thing because he is such a pig, but when ABC or NBC wants a quote regarding what the Republicans or the conservatives are thinking about, they go to Limbaugh. They bring in a little bit of video, this herky-jerky video of this obese son of a bitch sitting behind his... why does he keep pulling at the front of his shirt like that? What is that? Is that a tick of some sort, Kathy? What is it?
It's because it's shiny and sticky.
His shirt?
Well, that too.
It's sticking... Oh, God, I shouldn't have asked you that. All right, to your phone calls. Michael in the Bronx is calling. Hey, Michael.
Hey, Mike. How you doing?
I'm all right.
All righty. I just want to touch base on a few areas of the Prop 8 that's in California.
Okay, go ahead.
All right. First off, you know, I'm surprised that this is going to a federal level because, if I'm not mistaken, California is one of those states that switched to the touchscreen voting machines.
Mm-hmm.
And we all know, and I know you touched base on this, on how these particular machines can get rigged. And the question is that, you know, was this vote actually accurate? Because it doesn't make sense how the people are going to vote against the Republicans, rightfully so, but yet they're going to vote in favor of a measure that favors Republicans. You know, it doesn't fit right there. And then this idea of Ted Olson getting involved, I heard a couple of radio talk show hosts wondering, like, you know, what's his real motive? Because this is the same guy that argued to get George W. Bush into office to begin with and not count the people's votes. Mm-hmm. I came up with two possibilities. Are you ready for this?
Yeah, go ahead.
All right. One possibility is that he he could very well be a mole, because if he wants to take to a federal level and goes to the Supreme Court, and the Supreme Court votes to keep Prop 8 in order, that becomes somewhat settled law there. And then, you know, the gays that are fighting for equal justice, you know, that they probably won't have another leg to stand on. So I don't know if this is set up against the gays. But then the other thing that came to mind was why he was being so much involved. What Republican do you recall that is gay, and does this will have a ruling, this ruling would affect them in a negative way?
Off the top of head of my, I can't, but you got 10 seconds.
I got you. Dick Cheney's daughter, Mary Cheney. Remember her?
Well, I don't think Dick Cheney cares about his daughter at all. She produced a grandchild for him, and thanks, Michael. And, you know, Cheney is Cheney. I can't, after watching this psychotic man for the past 35 years, I can't see anything in him that remotely resembles empathy or love. You know what I'm saying?
Better stand back. Here come 50,000 watts of free speech. It's Mike Malloy.
Ooh. Ooh. 25 before the hour. Dilbert is driving in in New Mexico. Let's see on XM. Hey, Dilbert.
Hi, Mike. Pleasure to talk to you.
All mine.
I look forward to listening to you every night I'm on the road.
Are you a long-distance driver of some sort?
Yes, sir.
Okay.
Yes. I wanted to comment about this. I don't remember who it was questioning the Supreme Court nominee's ability to make a decision when she was on her menses.
That was G. Gordon Liddy.
Okay. Well, it might serve him well to remember that it's pretty well established that men make bad decisions when they have an erection. Or have had an erection, or maybe about to have an erection.
Well, you're absolutely right. As a matter of fact, some of the dumbest decisions a man could make is right around or are right around that time. Thanks, Dilbert. You make me nervous, though. Thanks, Dilbert. I appreciate you checking in.
Some of them were presidents.
Yeah, that's true. I love it. Way to go, Dilbert. By the way, if you're keeping track, on Friday night when we open a bottle of wine here on the program at the very end, this is a California wine. I guess it's in, you know, kind of raising a glass and hope California pulls out of this. It's from Bay Bridge Vineyards, a nice Cabernet. A little sweet, but that's okay. My son Chris brought this when he came over on the weekend, but, it's Bay Bridge Vineyards, and it's a California Cabernet. So thanks to the vintner out there who put that one together, huh?
What? And what sort of fancy cheese will you be enjoying with your wine, you elitist liberal pig? I'm sure it's going to be special.
It is indeed. Captain Marion Memphis writes, regarding California's money woes, in my opinion, the economic screwing of California began in great measure with Dick Cheney's secret energy conference. Remember how some of the energy tyrants were caught on tape gloating about economically screwing grandma in California? Captain Marion Memphis, P.S. Meanwhile, Lamar Alexander, one of Tennessee's idiot Republican senators, has proposed the building of numerous new nuke power plants, potential terrorist incidents on the hoof, in my opinion, most likely domestic Bush-Cheney ones, the terrorists, not to mention the radioactive contamination of Tennessee wildlife and water from the Oak Ridge leaks already. Yeah, I hear you, Mary. I remember when I was a kid and we were told that nuclear energy was going to make energy so cheap there'd be no reason to put a meter on your house. I wonder if it could be. Nah, it can't. And T writes in, Mike, the impending doom that seems to loom in the near future for the failure of the California economy, the national economy, the world economy, with uncontrolled global weather change, eternal world war. It all seems like an episode of Star Trek where the captain or other essential crew member is controlled by an alien. The ship is positioned closer and closer to the impending Nova as the automatic warning system announces outer hull breach in 5 minutes, 4, 3, 2, 1. In the fantasy, the crew takes action at the last possible second, only to find the alien wanted to know how far they would go. Isn't extinction a little too far? T. Well, yeah. Yes. Yes. Absolutely. Too far. Tom's in Nashville, listening on XM. Hey, Tom.
Hey, Mike. How you doing?
I'm all right.
Yeah, I think that probably the direction we need to go, especially at this point in time with California beginning or in the process of failing and several other states close behind, the divisiveness that both sides keep spewing is really just going to harden people's hearts. My grandmother was born in 1900, and I asked her back in the early 80s, what it was like back then. And she told me, honey, you better hope you never have to go through what we went through. And I asked her why, and she said, because you all don't do for each other. We didn't have anything, and we still did for each other. And I think that's really what it's going to come down to. We can't rely on government to take care of us. We're going to have to rely on each other as far as neighbors and good-natured people.
Well, let me add something, Tom, because, I hear what you're saying. I'm sure my grandma, who was born in 1898, probably said the same thing, and I'm sure she did. But she came at it from a kind of a Christian/socialist point of view. And here's the difference. Your grandma and my grandma is that back then the population of the United States, I think, was about 120 million. In other words, almost two-thirds less than what it is now. We were primarily an agrarian society still. In 1898 and 1900, we were. Most people lived on farms or in rural areas back then. And taking care of each other had a whole different meaning. We were still kind of a homogeneous or homogeneous, however you say that damn word, society. It was right around the turn of that last century where this big influx of European immigrants started to come here. A lot of people from Italy. My grandparents went on that one. A lot of people from Poland. A lot of people from Germany. And it did change the complexion. The social complexion of the country, because a lot of those people who came here had ideas that were political ideas that were entirely different from what was established here or what attempted to be established here. The point I'm trying to make is that I think we're kind of beyond the point where we can take care of each other. Who in the hell are we going to take care of? I get the philosophy of what you're saying. I do. I get the empathy of what you're talking about. I do. I do get that. I really, really, really do. Tonight, when I put my 4.5-year-old to bed, I was telling her a story. We've got a garden here, out behind the house in the studio, and I was trying to explain to my daughter Molly that the garden my grandmother had was approximately 10 times bigger than the garden we have, that Kathy and Molly and I have. And why that was so important to me as a kid growing up working in that garden, what it meant. It didn't mean anything at the time. It was just a pain in the butt, you know, to go out there and weed with grandma. But, it really meant something, back then. But those days, really, they're not here anymore. Government can, I think the function of government, as long as we're going to have a capitalist society to operate in, the function of government is to make sure that they don't screw us too badly. The corporations, government doesn't screw us. What the hell? What can they do? They can conscript us and make us go fight wars, I guess. But government, to me, they can't do anything to hurt us. It's corporate America that does all the pain. I mean, there's not a government agency out there, with the possible exception of the Tennessee Valley Authority. Cap Mary just wrote about that. But there's not a government out there. There's not anything I can think of out there that has caused us grief, that was done to us by government, like what corporate America has done to us. Do you understand what I'm saying here?
I understand your direction. I don't necessarily agree with it.
Well, that's all right. I'm a democratic socialist from the word go. Wasn't, but got to that point from having been alive as long as I've been alive, from watching cycles of the economy's up, the economy's down, from understanding how the wealthy in this country are only interested in one thing, and that's getting wealthier. They don't give a goddamn. They give not a care about you and me. This helping each other. Okay. All of us down here, the unemployed, and I was in March and, or February, until we put this thing together ourselves. Okay, let's all the unemployed get together and do what? Sit around an open fire like they did in the 30s and try to boil soup in a can? No. Again, with all due respect, Tom, those days are gone. They're just gone. And as far as the hacking back and forth from both sides of the aisle, I don't agree with that. I don't believe that there is an equal amount of ugliness on both sides of the aisle. It's just not there. The viciousness, the hideousness is coming from what's left of the Republican Party. And the proof of that is simply, and thanks, Tom, I got to move on. The proof of that is simply, when the people speaking for the Republican Party, the chief spokesperson now for the Republican Party is a drug addicted or a former drug addicted, arrested. And I'm not talking about, I'm talking about sending his housekeeper out to score the drugs for him. Had he not been wealthy, one of the wealthiest people in America, the son of a bitch would have been in prison by now. You would be, Tom. I would be, but not the Limbaugh man. When this guy, this hideous man, this drug-addled freak who drove himself deaf from his illegal pill popping, when he becomes the spokesperson for a major political party, to the extent that the people who identified as the leaders of that party go to him with their privates in their hands saying, "Please bless me, Rush," then no. The Democratic Party may be in trouble, but it's not heading into the sun like the Republican Party is.
One pill makes you larger, and one pill makes you small. Mother gives you, don't do anything at all. Go ask Alice when she's 10 feet tall. And if you go chasing rabbits,
all of their way. How can I even try? I can never win. Hearing them, seeing them in the state I'm in. How could she say to me, love will find a way?
Thanks to our crew, Ben Birch, the technical advisor of this program, Sharon Gordy, our military affairs correspondent, Bruce Enberg, economic affairs correspondent. Where'd the music go? That was pretty. There it is. Bob Alexander and Bridget Wolf, who ethically advise us when Is it gone again? when we need to be ethically advised. And, of course, Catherine Bay, who is our engineer and producer, executive producer. The usual crew. Boy, another senior moment. I had something I was going to say, but it's completely gone now. Okay. Luke is calling from Scranton, PA, listening on XM. Hey, Luke.
Hey, how's it going?
Moving right along.
Well, good. Hey, I was calling tonight because I was just sitting here kind of wondering. It's such a divisive issue in the country right now with the topic of torture.
Uh-huh.
And I find it kind of interesting that there's a lot of people that consider it really okay to torture people, but primarily the subject that is being tortured is Muslim people.
Mm-hmm.
And I find it tough to understand how Christian people can accept it okay to treat another person in such a manner.
Well, I have a real cynical answer to that, if you really want it.
Mm-hmm.
And that is that Christianity is a blood and torture cult. Sorry if for people who believe in the baby Jesus and so on and so forth, but it's a blood cult. Somebody sent this to me again today. I'll just share it with you, Luke. Christianity is the belief that a cosmic Jewish zombie who is his own father can make you live forever if you symbolically eat his flesh, drink his blood, and telepathically tell him you accept him as your master so he can remove an evil force from your soul that is present in humanity because a rib woman was convinced by a talking snake to eat from a magical tree. Now, I can't put it any better or any more succinctly than that, except to me, Christianity is a blood cult. It is based on death. The whole thing is based on death. You can avoid death, you see, if you accept the doctrine of the Christian Church. You can avoid dying altogether. Oh, there might be a temporary loss of consciousness as you shoot up to heaven, but and since it is a death cult, a blood cult, and don't forget, one of the most moving stories to Christians is the trip to Golgotha that Jesus made. While he was beaten and spat upon and flayed by the crowds and the Romans and forced to carry his own cross until Simon of Cyrene, who happened to be a black man, stepped out of the crowd and tried to ease his burden. I say happened to be a black man because Christians, white Christians here in the South anyway, usually leave that part out. But then the crucifixion, which was nothing but pure torture. If you read about crucifixion, read it in Wikipedia or wherever you want to go, it was a hell of a lot more serious than waterboarding, not to minimize waterboarding. That's how bad crucifixion was, So it's a torture, blood, death cult, Christianity. Since it, and the only redemption is to go with the person who was tortured and bled to death on the cross. If you question why Christians are okay with torture of Muslims, I think that's the answer. Of course, they're in deadly competition, have been for 1,000 years. Probably a little bit more than that. Deadly competition for, to claim the correct path to Allah, Yahweh, whatever you want to call God, their God. So that's the best I can come up with, pal. It's insanity. Wasn't a very good answer? Okay. Well, what the hell? Let me just modify, how do they say it in Congress? Extend my comments? I forget what the first word is. But anyway, about, the caller was talking about taking care of each other. Look, I fundamentally agree with that. I really do. What I'm saying on the scale that it would become necessary now, unless every other household in America turns to its right or the left and embraces somebody in the neighborhood, it's almost beyond impossible. It's into the realm of fantasy. But I believe in that concept of taking care of each other. That's what Hugh Romney, You remember Hugh Romney at Woodstock, Wavy Gravy, who said we got to feed each other? You know, they woke up Saturday morning and they were in a sea of mud and 400,000 people when they expected 80,000. And, you know, a couple thousand were tripping their brains out and really in dangerous position because of, remember this, the brown acid going around out there. There's a warning on that one. Of course, it's your head. Remember all that? Of course you do. You weren't there. Neither was I. But we remember all that, don't we? And when Wavy Gravy stood on the stage that morning and said, you know, the hog farm is going to try to feed everybody. If you're not hungry, you know, you eat half of what's on your plate, turn to the person next to you and feed your neighbor. Remember that? Remember all that? All that crazy hippie garbage? Huh? Garbage? Isn't that what it was called? Those crazy ass hippies? Well, there's the message. And to me, that comes straight from Jesus, doesn't it? Feeding the multitudes with the loaves and fishes, something like that. Have a great weekend. I'll see you Monday night. Take care. Do take care. Keep it lit. I'm Mike Malloy. Have a great weekend, Kevin, wherever you are.
Straight to heaven, just like my mama said.
Provider and licensing.